Good evening, everybody. This is David Noble and Dog Etty Bay, and welcome to tonight's edition of Radio Edu Talk. Delighted to be joined, as ever, by John Johnson, who's over in Glasgow, and we have in our virtual studio this evening, Katrina Oates, formerly of Education Scotland. In a moment, Katrina will tell us a bit about what she's up to just now, and delighted that tonight we're going to be hearing about Katrina's master's dissertation on learning rounds. So if you're new to the concept of learning rounds, I'm sure we'll be finding out the basics and then looking into a little bit about how it's playing out in practice in Scotland. As ever, there'll be an opportunity to make some points during the show or indeed afterwards. So if you've got a comment or indeed a question for Katrina around the topic of learning rounds, then at any point during the show you can email edutalker, that's edutalkr at hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, just put your comment or question there and include the hashtag edutalk. So good evening, Katrina, thanks very much for joining us. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks, David. Thanks for having me. I'm really pleased to be able to join you tonight.
That's fantastic. And just before we start, John, is this topic something that you've come across? I know you've been out of the classroom for a couple of years now, but is this something in your locality that you've heard has been tried out, or is it all totally new?
Not local to me, but I've heard it. I mean, a few times in Teach Me, people attempted learning rounds or proposed learning rounds as a method of doing some sort of discussion work, and I had difficulty at that point understanding what learning rounds was. It's been explained to me several times by a couple of people, and I think now I understand it, but I think meeting it from that angle rather than as sort of, and I may be completely wrong here, I now think of it as a sort of in-school CPD experience. I'm sure we're going to. I'll probably put right in that in a wee minute.
I suppose, Katrina, maybe just to start off with, it'd be nice to know a bit about, you know, what the background is to learning rounds and indeed to your master's research, and hopefully that's a broad enough question to start as well.
Yeah, sure. You're not too far off the mark there at all, John. Learning rounds is a kind of in-house CPD experience, but you know, it's not only in-house. But I'll start off by telling you a little bit about what it is and where it came from. It's kind of collaborative professional learning, and it's an adaptation of the medical practice of clinical rounds, you know, where doctors and students and other professionals go round assessing patients and trying to come to a kind of consensus on a diagnosis and, you know, and indeed a prognosis on how to treat the patient, how to get the patient better. In a similar way, learning rounds operates with groups of teachers who go around schools observing a certain area of focus, and then they have the discussion to try and work out, you know, how to move things on, how to make things better. And they do that by creating a basis of evidence whereby they describe what they've seen. They agree how to phrase these observations, and then from that they'll all agree their next steps in the improvement process. But, you know, there's a few protocols and behaviours that need to be followed in the process. For example, participation should be voluntary. There's a non-judgmental voice. A descriptive voice is used when they're talking about what they're observing. And, you know, these things are quite important to the process. So that's basically where it came from and how it's played out. Now, you said it was really about kind of in-house CPD. It is mainly in-house CPD, but it can also be inter-school. You know, it doesn't have to be restricted to one school. Schools can join up and do a learning round together on a kind of wider network basis. And other agencies can get involved as well. So, yes, it's in-house, but it doesn't have to be only in-house. So does that help?
Yep, I think the actual the round bit and the coming from the medicine gives you quite a nice picture. Maybe not quite. My immediate picture is Doctor in the House from 1960s movies, which is my whole experience, I think, of hospitals. But you get the idea of, you know, that gives you a concrete image of people going round. There's a few things that come to mind immediately, but I think we'll wait until we're a bit further on.
Okay.
And Katrina, just before you kind of outline what your research question was and the kind of methodology and I suppose ultimately what the data you gathered and your findings, can you hopefully not putting you in the spot, but I know that you're somebody who's participated or facilitated a number of learning rounds over the last couple of years, so can you pick out how it kind of typically operates then, if let's say it was over a period of a number of hours, you know, can you boil it down just to a few simple steps in the process, the way that you've maybe observed it typically in schools and other places around Scotland, and also maybe just say something about what learning rounds is not?
Okay. Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, it's very simple to set up. Anyone can set up a learning round. The important thing is that people volunteer. So typically in a school, maybe some person will have heard about it from somewhere else, or maybe someone comes into the school to explain a bit about learning rounds, just to, you know, give people the idea or, you know, stimulate a bit of interest in it. And then a group of interested colleagues in the school will get together and agree an area of focus that they might want to use as the basis for their learning round. So once you've got your team, they then would split up into different groups. They would go and carry out observations. And the observations are typically quite short, maybe 15, 20 minutes. So it would really be the beginning of a lesson and the end of a lesson. And you timetable it so that everyone gets to see the beginning and an end. And you kind of dovetail through maybe a morning watching different classes so that everybody gets to see all the classes, either at the beginning or the end. And after that, you know, you gather your evidence, making your observations, come together and discuss it. It's quite a good idea to maybe try and get someone to facilitate it if it's the first time you've done it as a school, but it's not necessary. So basically, you know, the costs involved are really pretty scant. The costs are mostly involved in releasing the teachers to observe their colleagues. So that's basically how it would happen. Over a morning, say, the observations would happen. In the afternoon, there's a group discussion where everyone shares their observations in a descriptive way, and then from that you can identify a set of next steps. That might not happen on that day, you know, you might spend the day in observations and discussions, follow up later on with outlining the next steps. What was the second part of your question, David? I forgot.
It was just, you know, what is learning rounds not then? Maybe without referring to you can talk about your research at this point if you want, because I know that can
happen.
But, you know, if learning rounds, it's been around for a couple of years now in Scotland since Richard Elmore came, a kind of study visit. So, you know, from, you know, what are kind of people's misconceptions generally, as I say, maybe without actually talking about the research that you can.
I don't know if I've spoken to enough people to work out what misconceptions might be going around, to be honest, but I think it's really important that it doesn't get mistaken for another form of quality assurance whereby teachers are being observed and then, you know, they're being evaluated essentially on their practice. So it's definitely not about evaluating teachers' practice. It's not about seeing colleagues. It's not about seeing colleagues teaching and then saying, "Oh, that was great, but you need to work on X, Y, Z." So it's not a form of quality assurance, and it's also it's not really a forum for sharing tips and tricks either. Yeah, and that's something that I did come across in the research. You know, it's not a way of watching other colleagues teaching and then thinking, oh, that's a great idea, I'm going to try that out. So I think those are the two potentially, you know, dangerous misconceptions that may well be construed around it.
Katrina, sorry, just around that sort of idea of it's not tics and tricks, not tricks and tips, and it's not quality assurance, it's not a sort of assessment. Who is the learning round for? Is it for the teachers being observed, the observers, or both?
It's essentially, it's for the teachers who are doing the observing.
Right.
Okay? So the teachers who are being observed don't get any direct feedback.
So they're not involved in the discussions afterwards?
They're not involved in the discussions, no. They're not involved in the discussions, but by the time the next steps have evolved in the process, then the next steps could be presented to the whole school. Okay, so anyone interested, and I would always include the observed teachers at that point, and anyone else who maybe wasn't involved, but definitely observed teachers, at the point where you share the next steps, then that's where they would get involved. It's quite a difficult one, this, because I think we do live in a culture where we're very used to being evaluated, you know, as teachers. Mm-hmm. And it is quite a difficult one for teachers to sometimes accept that, you know, they're going to be observed, but they're not going to get instant feedback. You know, they're not going to get a tick list saying, well, that was good, and you need to work on that. Yeah. It's not like that at all. And, you know, I think culturally we haven't been a little bit, I think we've been a little bit kind of moulded in that way. It's a bit ingrained sometimes that it's expected that you will. But learning rounds isn't for that purpose.
Mm. And Katrina, if let's say through the discussions in an afternoon, the group reached agreement that, and I'm going to use, hopefully get some of the language right here, because I have been involved in a couple of learning rounds. So the group might say, might come to the conclusion that, or the shared observation, that in few lessons there were instances of interdisciplinary learning. So that's just a statement, isn't it? But where might that go in the next steps then? Does it eventually become evaluative, or is that just presented to the whole school and the whole school might argue or might reach the conclusion that that is fine because of X, Y and Z, or that this is something that we would like to address as a whole staff, or does it then go to senior management to say, we're not happy with this, so we will put this into a school improvement plan, although it's not part of a learning round anymore. We are eventually making evaluation based on this, or does it need to be more organic the whole way through?
No, I don't really think so, to be honest, David. I think, you know, at the stage where the next steps have been identified, and say, like you say, there were a few observations where interdisciplinary learning took place, you know, it would then be up to the group to decide, well, do we want to do something about this, or will we leave it? And at that stage, you know, whether it's part of the school improvement plan or maybe not, I guess, you know, they could then take it up and say, well, we will make this a, you know, we'll try and make this a priority and do something about this one. Okay, so, you know, at that stage, it can be fairly open.
So does that mean it's important, Katrina, that a group that was doing the observation included some decision makers, some management, or not?
Well, I guess it probably would. But I mean, I was in a school today where the head teacher is actually banned from the discussions and meetings. So you know, it's very much up to. I think it's up to the observing team, the group, the facilitator to decide. You know, because what they want out of the whole process is improvement. You know, they do want, you know, the aim is improvement. that it's improvement across the board, you know, it's improvement across the school for everyone. It's not just improvement for the teachers who've been watching, and that's why the next steps have to be formulated in such a way to ensure that, you know, the best possible chance of improvement across the board on the priorities they decide can happen.
Yeah, so you,
does that make sense?
Yeah, so you do need, at some point, you need somebody who is going to say, this is part of our improvement plan, or this is something we're going to take forward in some way.
Well, yeah, or it could become, it could actually become the improvement plan.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Okay, Katrina, it'd be great to hear specifically then about your master's study, and you know, we have got a decent amount of time left in tonight's show, and however, I do appreciate that it's very difficult to boil down a couple of years' work in a weighty dissertation into just a few minutes. But it would be great to hear about, you know, just how you've kind of formulated your research question, your methodology, and your methods that you used, and you know, then I suppose into what your findings were, and then a conclusion. So I'm certainly interested to hear what you have to say. And maybe just before you start, you know, as Katrina gets into the kind of the meat of tonight's topic on learning rounds, if you have got a comment or question, then if you could just email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or if you're on Twitter, just include the hashtag edutalk. On you go, Katrina.
Okay, well, I decided to do learning rounds because there really isn't very much, there's not very much to date in terms of research or even, you know, available evaluative reports about what's been done in local authorities where I know that it has been taking place. So really there's very little available at the moment about it. So that's why I thought it would be quite a good topic to research. I wanted to look at it from a kind of theory into practice point of view. So I considered the literature around about professional learning communities, really because I think that learning rounds, you know, can be considered as a professional learning community, and there are certain commonalities with some other models that I went into in my dissertation. But really, I kind of had to do that because if I didn't, there wouldn't really have been much literature for me to review as part of the dissertation. So, you know, that was a kind of necessity for me in a way. But I thought it was, you know, that's what I would have chosen anyway. So it was kind of theory into practice, and the theoretical models were considered, and learning rounds as they related to some of these models were considered. There's quite a lot of commonalities across them. And the other side of it was, how is the actual theory of learning rounds itself, how is that being translated into practice in Scottish schools? So that was the basis, that was the kind of main overarching research question. I started off thinking this was a case study, but actually as it evolved, it became clear that it probably was much more of a mixed methods study. I thought it fitted quite neatly into a case study design because it was, you know, it was a kind of identifiable practice which was fairly well contained going on inside schools. The way my study evolved, though, it evolved into a mixed method study. I ended up doing a survey to try to establish what the sort of general broad landscape was in terms of understanding of learning rounds and understanding of the theory of learning rounds, and how that understanding was being transferred into practice. So that gave me quite a lot of quantitative data, and I kind of backed that up with a bit of further investigation into the process itself by recording and observing some observations of the discussions at the post-observation stage of learning rounds. So that gave me lots of qualitative data. So the two sides of it then, you know, with the two sides of it imagined like this, it was clearly a mixed method study. The questions I actually addressed were, oh golly, let me just get back to it. It kind of fell into two halves, really. I felt that it was a kind of study of two halves. I felt there was the literature part and then there was the theory into practice part. So, you know, it did seem a little bit disjointed at times, but my supervisor, he was absolutely fine with that. He said that there really wasn't any other way I could approach it at this stage, given the scope that was available to me, which wasn't huge, to be honest. So, where are we? Let me see, what was I talking about there? Let me think. Questions. Right, yeah. The questions are really, how was the theory of learning when relating into practice? That was quite an interesting exercise because it surprised us all quite a lot. What we learned from the survey, which got a reasonable uptake, given the number of schools that were involved, we got quite a good uptake on that. And what transpired was that teachers acknowledge quite a lot of aspects of the theory, and you know they've discussed it, they've heard about it, they understand a lot of these aspects of theory, but when it comes to putting it into practice, it's not really happening to the same extent. So there's a bit of a gap there between how they're understanding it and how they're putting it into practice.
Ask a wee question there? When you say is that because they're putting it into practice but not doing it right? You know what I mean? Are they actually trying to do learning rounds and coming away from the theory?
I think that they're acknowledging what some of these theoretical aspects are. Mm-hmm. For example, you use a descriptive voice to describe what you see going on in the observations. You know, you describe the interactions in class, you describe what you see in class in a non-judgmental way. Now, you know, teachers understand what that means, obviously they do. So, you know, when I ask them the question in the survey, are you aware of the protocols of learning rounds, for example, using a descriptive voice, remaining non-judgmental? Yes, they do. But when I ask them, and did you put that into practice?
Yeah.
Then, you know, the numbers went down quite significantly. So it's not that they don't know about it. You know, they're perfectly well aware of it. But when it actually comes to doing it, it's not happening.
Do you think that's because it's very hard to do?
I think it probably is. I think it might be something to do with this kind of conditioning thing that we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that. It could also be that they haven't actually had enough practice in describing what they see in terms of, you know, what's going on in classrooms. It might just be they haven't had enough practice at describing what they see using a non-judgmental mm-hmm. voice. So there's, you know, there's various reasons why it might be happening. But it's not happening.
Yeah. I mean, quite often the classroom you describe in general times is your own. And it's very hard to do that in a non-judgmental or a non-judgmental.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about your own classroom, your own practice, what went wrong. And from experience, lots of teachers, you know, will criticise themselves. And will, you know, judge themselves as they talk about what they did. You know, this lesson went wrong, I should have followed that up, or I should have done this, or I shouldn't have done that. A normal method of discourse, so it must be very difficult to then jump into this non-judgmental version.
But the thing to remember is to focus on the teaching, you know, to focus mm-hmm. on the interactions, so that you can get a kind of cause and effect picture emerging. When the teacher does this, you know, this learning happens. And, you know, that is very non-judgmental.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to focus on. And it's just, you know, I think it's just a discipline of trying to look at the interactions at that level in that way, which is maybe quite difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like doing some scientific observations. Do that.
And it's something, I think it's something that, you know, that people probably do need to practice.
Yeah.
It's probably something that you need to rehearse. I think, you know, maybe looking at video recordings, for example, of a lesson and practicing together how to record your observations, you know, in a non-judgmental way would be a good preparation for a learning round. For example.
It's almost like giving pupils prompts to describe something. Teachers maybe need a prompt to keep the tone of the language right.
I think so. And practice.
Yeah.
You know, because we do live in quite an evaluative classroom culture when you come to think of it, don't we?
Well, most of the people who visit your classroom
are either
coming to do something with your children, visits like that, which are not judgmental, or they're observational visits, maybe by your head teacher for your PRD whatever, and those will be evaluative. So I think it's quite natural to go up. Just to veer off that, just because something's come into my head, I was wondering about the teachers who are observed, although they're not the focus. Did you find out if they found it useful?
Well, that wasn't one of my questions.
Right. Okay.
You know, because I was really focusing on on teacher understanding of the theory and how that was being borne out in practice and what was going on in the discussions. So I didn't really come into any contact with the observed teachers.
Right.
So, you know, this is why, you know, this is a small-scale study, and it's also got loads of limitations. Mm-hmm. You know, I was looking at theory and practice and one specific aspect of a practice which is really pretty little known nationally, you know, and I hear it's going on in different places, but when it came to actually pinning down schools where I could go to research, that was really, really hard. It was a lot harder than I thought from my initial understanding of, you know, how this practice was kind of being played out across Scotland. So I think, you know, you've got to take this study in the context of, you know, the fairly significant limitations which are surrounding it. And that's definitely one of them. I didn't have any contact with the observed teachers at all. But that would be, you know, that would be a good thing for future study.
Yeah, I can just imagine that sometimes doing an activity when you're being observed, just the fact that you're being observed changes things and sometimes makes you...
Changes what you do,
It also makes you more self-reflective or notice things in different ways.
Yeah. I mean, all of these things are, you know, are assumptions that you know, we've seen borne out.
Yeah.
Katrina, did you have any other findings? You know, you've kind of talked around the protocols and this idea that in your dissertation about language conflict. So did anything else come out? And then can you go into maybe say about what the conclusions that you reached were?
Well, you know, there was a fairly significant disconnect between theoretical understanding and what was going on in practice in across a few of the standard protocols of learning, shall we say. The whole notion of this being a kind of voluntary thing which teachers can just kind of pick up and run with, That was kind of challenged as well. I did find that in most of the schools that I saw, it was coming from someone in a management position. You know, so that kind of skews the... For me, it sort of skews the balance of the activity. You know, it becomes less neutral, I suppose, when it's done in that sort of a way. And that's not to say that that's necessarily a bad thing, you know, but it is meant to be a kind of teacher-owned and teacher-led activity. So when you're kind of being, when you're not volunteering for it, then, you know, there's obviously a limit to how much it can be teacher-owned and teacher-led. So that was another, that was another kind of little disconnect between the theory and practice. And the other main one was this idea of, I talked about sort of tips and tricks earlier on. The other main one that emerged was that people were seeing it really as a means of their own personal improvement. It's not really meant to be to make you a better teacher, having observed others. It's really meant to be something that's going to, you know, create improvement across the board and iron out inconsistencies, you know, across the board in a school, in across the observed colleagues, the observers. So the idea that it's for your own personal improvement was something that came out of the research, and that's definitely something that isn't an intended benefit, shall we say, of learning rounds. So it's important that it's, you know, it's not understood as a means for you to personally improve your own practice. It's a much more collective thing.
Right, so you're going to need a certain culture, I think, to get this running successfully. The other thing I'm just wondering about, as you were talking there, you know, you're saying voluntary. Obviously, the teachers who were observed were voluntary. But are the observers voluntary as well?
In theory, they should be,
So that assumes that you have a culture where there is the ability to do this, and it's going to be supported by management because you do need time, but they also will support you in a way where they're going to say, right, I'm just turning this over to you to a large extent. If it was done successfully, it sounds like a really sort of rich culture.
I think it is, and I think that's where, you know, the whole professional learning community side of it comes in, because I think it is a good way to create a really productive professional learning community if it's done properly. But if it's not, you can't expect the same benefits. You know, you can't expect it to do all the things it says it can do in the tin if it's not being done in the way it should be done. That was really the basis of my findings.
And did you actually find anywhere that was, or anywhere that you thought, right, this is really looking in good shape, or was it?
There was lots of great things going on. But remember, I was looking at a very, very small part of the whole process, as well as this being a, you know, kind of little known process. I was only looking at, you know, one aspect of it, having established what the sort of broad understandings were. So I couldn't say, I haven't seen the process from start to finish in any of the schools that I visited. But there are some really good examples of great learning rounds happening. And I was in a school today, and they're just at a stage where they're wanting to, you know, they want to move on to the next step in the learning rounds. They've got about 80% of the school involved already, and they're looking to kind of widen it out to their community of schools and, you know, just try to keep momentum and keep it growing that way. And I think that would be a great thing to do, because that was another thing that came up in the literature. The whole idea of inter-school working is really quite significant here. I think it was I've earmarked this, but actually, let me just see if I can find it again. It was David Jackson, who came to one of the summer schools. I don't know if either of you two were at it. I think you were at the one he was at, David, in the Marriott. I don't know if you remember him, but
yes,
anyway, he sent me a few really, really good papers, and in one of them, he's saying, you know, between school networks may be the catalyst for the internal redesign required to generate professional learning networks within schools. So it might actually be that we have to take this to an inter-school level before we actually see the benefits, you know, internally in our own schools. So I think that's a really interesting dynamic, I think, because that's a challenge. You know, that really is a challenge. If it's hard enough to do learning rounds inside your own school, it's going to be even harder to do it as a sort of school's collective. But it might be that's what we actually have to do before we start seeing the benefits of what it can do for us, you know, as a school at an internal level.
That's really interesting, Katrina. I'm wondering if any, have you come across any subject-specific organisations, you know, that are interested in maybe doing this across a geographical area, you know, so it's not necessarily within a cluster of schools, but it might be, let's say, science teachers are getting together at national level. Is that, it just strikes me that might be one way forward that some subject organisations might want to look at this.
I think that'd be a great idea. Nobody's, as far as I know, nobody's done it so far. I might be wrong in that, but I haven't heard of it happening at that kind of a level. But I think that'd be a great idea. I think that'd be really, really good. But it'd be difficult to coordinate, I think. But, you know, it's the sort of thing that could start off. It could start off at a fairly local level within one local authority, for example. You know, maybe some neighbouring city schools could organise one probably quite easily, I should think. But, you know, I think doing it nationally, that might be a bit more of a challenge. I don't know if it's something that can be done online using technology. I haven't really thought that far ahead about it, to be honest. But I think it could be something that is a bit of a challenge. I think it's something that might have to be done, just, you know, old-fashioned face-to-face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm conscious about, we're just kind of coming into the last 5 minutes or so, so if you have a comment or question for Katrina, if you could email that or tweet it in the next couple of minutes or so, and we can introduce them to our conversation. You've kind of talked about a little bit about how you might see things going, Katrina. Is there anything else that came out, in terms of your formal conclusion and of your dissertation? You know, anything else that we should be looking to actually connect the theory to the practice better? And also, you know, you obviously finished this paper some time ago now, so since then, is there anything else that's been going around in your mind about how to improve aspects of the learning rounds process?
I'm not sure, to be honest, David. I'd really like to. I just feel I kind of scratched the surface of this. You know, I just feel that there's just so much more that we can learn about this process. And this is, for me, you know, this is a start. It's by no means, you know, comprehensive. I hope it might give people an indication of where to start themselves and how to get the best out of it. But I still think there's loads more I think actually we need to find out more about it, because, you know, when you think about even international perspectives, collaborative learning is really what's happening. It's really how we're learning. You know, the idea of experts parachuting in and telling us how to do things, I think those days are kind of numbered, you know. And I do think that this gives teachers a really, really good way to work out, you know, steps for improvement for themselves. And I saw your question about introspection. I think it's a really relevant one. I think there is a danger of learning rounds being a bit introspective if it's constrained to, you know, one school in-house, but it doesn't need to be. You know, the model actually is based on networks of schools working together, not just single schools. So I think, you know, that's maybe a next step for supporting schools who are interested and who do want to move on. You know, there's maybe some research needs to be done on how best to support them.
And I know that I think I'm right in saying that the Donaldson Report actually mentioned learning rounds.
Yeah.
Or particular pieces of work from the National CPD team. You know, when it's something that's there's maybe a push to disseminate or introduce more widely across a country. If you're looking at, for example, Glow previously, then you would have things like Glow Mentors and such like. And has there been any move at all within authorities or elsewhere to have, for example, learning around champions or people who are recognised or trained as being able to, or being effective at facilitating learning rounds?
Oh, there are plenty of people at local authority level who, you know, who have developed expertise now in facilitating learning rounds. As for formal training, I think it's just been experience. You know, they've just kind of built up experience in it. So there are plenty of champions. It's not a kind of formalised thing, though. You know, there's not a list of learning rounds champions anywhere, as far as I know. I think it's just been a kind of something that's evolved in interested local authorities. And it's quite hard to pin these people down. You know, if you don't know, if you haven't had contact with them, I know some, but, you know, it's only because I know them through National CCD team work. So there's no platform. That's the thing that's missing, I think. There's no real platform for sharing work on learning rounds, and I think that would be a helpful thing as well. Okay.
Well, John, I don't know. Have you had a chance to check, John, if there's anything on Twitter?
I'm struggling here because I was actually in quite late today, Katrina, so I my computer isn't particularly organised.
No, don't worry.
I'll keep going, John. I'll keep going.
And I'm not.
Yeah, that's fine. Don't worry.
I think I can't see anything immediately that's popping up, but I've
less computers
in my face than I usually have.
I think it's important.
I think, well, just if I can get a wee question about this, you know, this idea of having somebody to champion learning rounds. Do you think that, I mean, there's quite a few different things in CPD and development and all sorts of ways that need championed, and as David mentioned, we had Glow Mentors, other sort of national efforts like that. Is that likely to be happening, do you think? Is somebody putting this forward at Education Scotland, do you know, or?
Well, I'm not really sure, to be honest. As you know, there's no national CPD team anymore. There's work going on in terms of CPD now called professional learning. And I just don't know. I'm afraid I don't know. There was a Glow online community for learning rounds practitioners, but there's now no one to facilitate it. So, you know, that's a bit of a that's sitting there. And I think if there was somebody who could come along and facilitate that, then, you know, there might be a bit of interest and activity around about that. Mm-hmm. So that's as much as I know about what's going on nationally with it now.
And right on cue, we've had a tweet from Barbara van der Meulen, who's listening in. She's just come to tonight's show late on, and took the words right out of my mouth. She was asking where she can actually get a chance to read Katrina's work online, and the links are, if you just Google Radio EduTalk or you go to the Radio EduTalk page, then under the listing for Katrina's appearance tonight is a link to the Learning Rounds Toolkit, which I think was a piece of work that the National CPD team did at some time back. And there's also a link to Katrina's blog. I suppose, I know we're running out of time, but do you want to say just a bit about your blog and how that tied in with the process of your master's study?
Yeah, well, the blog was a requirement, really. It was a requirement to develop a reflective journal as part of our studies. And I just chose to do it as a blog because, for me, it was the easiest thing to do. A lot of my work's online, and I always knew where I could find it. So I just did it as a blog, and it's been really good, actually. I feel I've kind of neglected it a bit. Especially at the latter stages of writing that dissertation, you know, they really, I think they've just you know, too much reflection goes on, and I had to get them down on paper, so I neglected it a bit at that stage. But it's been really helpful for me, and you know, now I've posted up my dissertation onto it, so if anyone does want to read it, then it's there. And I'll keep the blog going. I think that was the one kind of good spin-off for me, because you know, if I had done something on paper, it would have been submitted, and I probably would, you know, never have given recording any of my reflections a second thought. But you know, I will keep doing it on this blog, so it's been a good thing for me. I think it's now kind of part of my professional practice, if you like. It's mm-hmm. you know, I'll try and record my own reflections, and I'll comment on things that other people are doing and pick up things that I like, and you know, it's just now part of what I do in terms of my mm-hmm. job. So yeah, that'll keep putting on.
You just feel as if you've shared a very small part of your journey. You know, it's a blog that I've visited regularly. And so the web address is just katrinao.wordpress.com, isn't it? And the link is on the Radio Edge Talk page. I'm just ask John if he wants to come in a moment for any final thoughts. And I'm certainly fascinated. I've spoken briefly with a couple of academics recently and just mentioned the learning rounds. And I got the impression that there was still a bit of confusion over, you know, how it would play out in practice. I'm guessing that learning rounds is not a feature of higher education institutions presently, although I might be wrong there. There was also...
Glasgow University has incorporated learning rounds as a practice for student observations. I remember this at STEC, at one of the STEC conferences actually one year. So I know that they have picked it up. I haven't spoken to anyone involved in it, but I know that they're doing it. And so there's quite a lot of interest in it. Aileen Kennedy at Strathclyde is quite interested in my work, and I'm going to speak to her at some point, you know, about maybe doing something else. So there is a lot of interest in it, and I think they see it as a kind of legitimate, you know, way ahead for as a form of teacher education in a way. So I think there's possibilities there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm interested in how it'll play out in terms of looking at the content or the draft content in the new suite of professional standards. So at the moment, the GTC website, you know, the draft standard for career long professional learning is there, and it's elsewhere than the other standards, but there's a strong emphasis on what's termed professional inquiry, and we could talk for hours about what that actually means. I'm very interested in whether participation in learning rounds will be seen as an excellent or a valid form of professional inquiry, and I can see I've heard one or two people starting to talk around that. Some people are, you know, critical of learning rounds when it's maybe there's a limited time and there might be a more traditional or possibly a more effective form of professional inquiry. But I just think that the time might be right in certain areas of Scotland that learning rounds is seen as a way of many teachers who possibly previously haven't engaged in recognised forms of professional inquiry actually starting to do so, and then that might lead on to other forms of inquiry. But it'll just be interesting to see to what extent academics and those with an interest in CPL or whatever we term it nowadays, what they come to think of where learning rounds actually sits within CPD, CPL, and within, you know, rigorous academic or maybe even master's level study that teachers are being asked to or wish to engage in.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really interesting point. And using it as a basis for a professional inquiry, I think that's a perfectly valid thing to do, because you create your own base of evidence, you know, but it's getting the evidence right, it's getting the evidence in the right language, which is key. But, you know, what you essentially do in learning rounds is create the evidence that you can then go off and analyse and decide what interventions you might want to take, and, you know, see what happens. But, you know, I think it's ideal for some sort of a professional inquiry. I think that would be a great thing to do.
John, any final points?
Well, just an observation of what you were talking about there, and this idea of teachers doing professional inquiry, maybe learning rounds is a way for us to train ourselves in looking at things with this sort of unemotional and non-judgmental way, which I think is a real stumbling point to move from just having fun in your CPD to actually making it into something that's academic. I mean, yourself.
That's academic, yeah, and has impact on praxis as well, though. You know, that's something that that we really don't want to lose sight of, and that's something that, you know, doing this process properly, you can see. You know, you can see how your CPD can have impact on your own practice, and hopefully practice across the school to even out inconsistencies.
Okay. Well, we've been listening this evening to Katrina Woods talking about learning rounds. Katrina, thank you so much for giving up time this evening to join us. It's been absolutely fascinating, and I hope people that have listened to the live show or the recording will pass the link on to colleagues, and we can spread the word about learning rounds and keep the discussion going. Mentioned your blog, and obviously if anybody has got any post-show comments about learning rounds or questions for Katrina, then you can post them at edutalk.cc, or you can find Katrina on Twitter and elsewhere. Just before you go, Katrina, do you maybe want to give us a flavour about what you're working on just now? From what you said this evening, it sounds as if you're still doing a lot of kind of practical work around learning rounds, but what other things are you involved in presently?
Oh, well, there's quite a lot going on. I'm working with Stirling University as a teaching fellow at the moment, so I'm supporting some students there. I've got a cohort currently out in practice, so that's really great. That's just one day a week. And I'm doing a bit of work with SCISA at Edinburgh University. I've recently got involved with Felmas as well, developing some online presence for them. You might have noticed a few tweets around about Felmas and their forthcoming conference later in November. Other than that, and I'm thinking about further study. I must say, I'm quite interested to take this on a bit further.
Uh-huh. Well, best wishes with that, Katrina, and everything else that you're involved in. And thanks again for joining us this evening. Until next time, everybody, good night.
Thank you as well, Katrina, and everybody else. Hopefully you'll listen next week again.
Oh, thank you very much.